Thank you, and we now start the final session. And our speaker first up is Nicole Raffin, an Associate Director at Macquarie Bank. Nicole is a qualified actuary and has been involved with the financial services industry since 1995. One of her primary responsibilities is to ensure the numerical currency and accuracy of technical materials, including the development and maintenance of various models to compare the impact of tax and social security issues on various investment product structures. I guess, Nicole, you'll have to be revising those models right now. Nicole also develops technical concepts for product enhancements and technical strategies, provides technical support to financial advisors, that is, assistance with superannuation and tax questions, and to others within Macquarie Bank. And Nicole is going to talk about the impact of the new tax rules on financial planning. Thanks, Nicole.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. So, yeah, what I want to talk to you about today is the impact of the new tax rules on financial planning. So on the 9th of May this year, Peter Costello got up and gave his 11th, I think, budget. And I guess you could say it was a bit of a surprise for those of us in the financial planning space. It'd be pretty hard to overestimate the impact of the changes that have been announced. So it's very exciting for retirees, it's very exciting for planners, and it's good news for business. So a bit of a win, and certainly a vote winner too. So what I've been asked to cover today is wealth accumulation strategies, estate planning issues, and the impacts of transition to retirement. So to look at those three areas, what I'd like to do is look at three phases of life. Looking at the impact of the super reforms on the retirement phase, so if you like, towards the end of life, before, you know, hopefully we all make it to retirement and enjoy retirement before we die. So the retirement phase, look at the transition phase, where perhaps work hours are reducing, so you're not quite retired, but you're sort of getting close, you're thinking about it, and the accumulation phase, which is obviously the earlier working years when you're hopefully building up your savings. So just, this is fairly basic, but just to have a look at the phases that we can think about, and perhaps the way we may have thought about super in the past, we had two distinct phases. We had accumulation phase and we had pension phase or retirement phase. Okay. Now there's transition to retirement pensions. So there's this new phase, which all you need to enter this phase is a birth certificate, reach a preservation age, and you can start a transition to retirement pension. And that's good for a number of reasons, which we'll look at today. So this transition phase is where you may well still be working full time, yet you're drawing down your super savings and perhaps contributing, like topping them up as well at the same time. So there's definitely this middle way now, this intermediate phase. Okay, so in terms of the income that you've got, you've got work income obviously until you stop work, so that would go through the transition phase. Your super income, you'll start drawing down your super when you want to, but you can do that from your preservation age. So you may have super income in this transition phase, and certainly in the retirement phase you'd have super income. And your non-super investment income, actually you could have that, of course, all the way through, but this will become, actually the changes to super are also attractive for your non-super investment income. So because your super from a tax fund comes out tax-free and in fact not assessable, that's terrific news for your super, but it's also great news for your other income. So your non-super investment income is going to come to the fore as well. So in terms of what do planners think about, well, they spend a lot of time in the early years of a client's life thinking about tax, minimising, planning, not avoiding, but, playing around tax. Okay, so tax is definitely a key focus and will definitely remain a focus for clients before they're in this over 60 tax-free super world. Now, going forward, social security and aged care issues are going to be increasingly important, because if super becomes so simple that, as the Treasurer has said, well, you won't really need a planner, will you? Maybe you still will, but you know, your social security issues are the issues where the planner can add some value for the client, and that will be that will become increasingly important if tax is not an issue. Okay, so doing a sort of back to the present kind of approach, we'll look at retirement first. If anyone wants to interrupt me as we go through, good luck. You're welcome to try. Okay, but I'm happy to take questions on the way through. So when we look at retirement, let's look at the impact on three types of pensions: allocated pensions, term allocated pensions, and self-managed super fund complying defined benefit pensions, which basically you can't offer anymore. But many people may have rushed into these before the deadline. So let's look at Dwight and Dee. They lived happily for 25 years, and then they met each other and got married, and it's been downhill since then. But anyway, Dee Wright is now Dee Wong, and Dwight started an allocated pension on 1 July 2006. He was aged 55 at that time. Okay, now his options for 1 July next year are that, you know, he can stay in that allocated pension. That's fine. He could commute to the new style of pension, or he could go back to accumulation if he wants to. And what we're going to look at is we're going to assume we're going to do an all or nothing approach. Let's look at what we're going to do with his allocated pension in total. So we'll look at a full commutation, but certainly partial commutation options are open to clients. And we'll also assume the post 83 low tax threshold has been used up. So we'll assume we've made use of that already. Okay, so things to think about. If someone's in an allocated pension, so a very common arrangement for financial planning clients to have, they need to think about the pension payment levels, tax deductible amounts, death benefit options may be an issue. The social security deduction amount is important, and the removal of RBL implications. This isn't actually relevant for Dwight because he's never had an RBL problem. He's never had an excess benefit, but certainly for clients with excess benefits, the removal of RBL is obviously a clear win. Okay, so in terms of pension payment levels, what do we need to think about? Well, actually, in a bit of a win, funds can use the new minimum factors for existing APs from 1 July next year. That's different to what happened, if you're aware, from 1 January 2006, there were new min and maximum factors for allocated pensions, but you actually had to commute and start a new pension to take advantage of those factors, which was a bit of a hassle. So introducing this change and saying, well, you can use the new factors if you want to, providing your fund will do so, you know, is a win for clients and certainly easier. Basically, there will be no maximum. There will be a maximum for transition to retirement pensions of 10%, but it's, you know, it's fairly straightforward and simple. But pretty much it's the minimum, and we can switch across to the new minimums if we want to and stay in that arrangement. So basically it's pretty neutral. Okay, so for Dwight, you can see on the graph the minimum pension payment levels for his purchase price. You can see the allocated pension level in the red, and the stepped blue shows the new simplified pension drawdown, what that means for Dwight. So it's pretty neutral. Okay, what about tax-free amounts? Well, if we continue in our allocated pension, there'll be no change to deductible amount. So, you know, that's okay, that's as we had it. But if we start a new pension, we'll have this new concept of a tax-free component, which may be bigger. So it may be a reason to change. So the significance for Dwight is that he was 55 1 July this year, so he's still under 60 for quite a few years. So the tax-free amount of a pension is still relevant for clients under the age of 60, but of course if he was 60 or over, come 1 July next year, he doesn't care if there's a deductible amount or a tax-free component of his pension in terms of the tax he'll have to pay, because he simply won't pay tax. But for clients under the age of 60, still relevant. So, the tax-free amount of an allocated pension, his existing allocated pension had undeducted contributions of $156,000, let's say. So the deductible amount would have been worked out as $156,000 divided by his life expectancy at that time, so $6,000. Okay, if he starts a new pension, with the existing allocated pensions balance, the UDCs have declined. So the 156, we've drawn down 1 year's worth of pensions. So the 156 less 6 is 150. But we've also got some pre-service. So both our UDC and our pre become a new tax-exempt component. Okay, so this is good news because our tax-free component as a percentage is 57.8% of pension payments. And Treasury have pretty much indicated that that proportion will stay constant for the life of a pension. They haven't said that officially yet, but at an IFSA Treasury liaison meeting thing, they indicated that's what they were going to do. But obviously we have to wait to see the legislation and the detail to be sure of that. But if we look at Dwight's situation, so his allocated pension, say he draws $29,500, which is the minimum for his age, the deductible amount of $6,000. So his assessable income would be, you can see there, $23,500. Okay, but the new pension with the 57.8% tax-free component, he'd only pay tax on $12,000. Okay. Now, what if we draw a much higher pension amount? So that's our minimum, but what if we draw more than the minimum? Well, if we draw $40,000, if he stays in his allocated pension, the amount of assessable income would be $34,000. But with the proportional approach and the new pension, only $17,000 would be assessable. So quite a difference. Now, what does this all mean? Well, depending on his tax rate, and he would get the 15% rebate on his pension, you can see the difference that it makes both in the first year in terms of the tax he would pay, depending on his tax rate, and by age 60. So quite a difference. So possibly a good reason to switch to the new type of pension to take advantage of this new tax-free component. Obviously, it's going to depend on the situation of the client, how favourable it would be. Not all clients will have pre-83 service, etc., etc. So planners will have to crunch the numbers, but it does seem like this is likely to be attractive for, you know, for clients to actually switch to the new pension. Okay, other considerations. What you know, is there anything we can do between now and 1 July next year to improve client situations? Well, before 1 July next year, there may be advantages in amalgamating super to maximise your pre-83 component. There may be advantages in keeping some benefits separate. The reason that is because they've said all drawdowns will be proportionate. So you simply won't be able to say, yeah, I'll take out my UDC now. You'll have to draw down proportionately. So you'll have to take both taxable and non-taxable components out. This is from 1 July next year. So you could also think about recontributing if you haven't already done so, or recontributing again. Fresh contributions to super within the new limits, and potentially spouse splitting may be advantageous for clients. So there's lots of things that planners need to think about for clients that they can be doing before 1 July next year, before we have this new regime in place. Now, on or after 1 July next year, we could start a new pension, or we could have separate benefits. We can play around with the tax-free components in different pensions if they're separate. Again, we could do recontributions or fresh contributions, and we could possibly consider partial commutations, all with the aim of optimising the client situation. Okay, now in terms of estate planning, if Dwight starts a new pension from 1 July next year, he cannot pay a pension. Like on his death, he would probably want to pay his spouse, but say she died first, he cannot actually pay a pension to a non-dependent adult child. Now, if he keeps his existing allocated pension, under current law, he could pay a lump sum in the form of a pension. He could pay a death benefit in the form of a pension to a non-dependent adult child, but the government has indicated they will change the law, so even for these existing arrangements, you won't have that option, which is, you know, not great for clients. If they do that, then that means that this issue won't be a factor in choosing whether to stay in an allocated pension or go to the new pension. Now, in terms of Social Security, On the 5th of September, the government announced the outcomes of consultation on the budget proposed plan. And one of the things they said was that the current treatment of pensions will basically continue for these new pensions. So it's actually very favourable for Social Security. The deductible amount for Social Security is calculated as the total purchase price divided by the life expectancy, as compared to the tax deductible amount, which at the moment is the undeducted purchase price only divided by the life expectancy. So things we need to think about are that, well, if we start a new pension, we'll have a new purchase price, we'll have a new life expectancy, so that'll make a bit of a difference. We have new minimum payments if we start or switch across to the new pension payments, so we're going to want to compare that to the deductible amount. This is all in terms of Social Security. Okay, so if we have a look at how that works, this graph shows the deduction amount for Social Security purposes versus the minimum pension payment. So the blue shaded in area shows the new pension minimum, and the red line shows the Social Security deductible amount. Now, it's going to be slightly different for males or females because they have a different life expectancy, but on this graph we've just shown the males. And the green area shows the allocated pension minimum. So you can see that at the younger ages, there's a little bit of assessable income for Social Security, so the green is a little bit higher than the red. And I thought I had a line in there for the... oh, no, I do. Yeah, so the new pension minimum, you can see pretty much all the time it's below that red line, okay? Which basically means that the new pension minimum will be lower than the deductible amount for Social Security. So in terms of means testing, you just won't have any income counting if you draw that minimum. Okay, so the conclusions are that the allocated pension and the new pension both are favourably treated for Social Security. So this is typically neutral, okay, in your decision what to do for Dwight. And also that Social Security, that was in terms of the income test, but often the assets test is the one that really bites, okay? And we'll have a look at that a bit later. Okay, now Dwight doesn't have an excess benefit, but if he did, if a client has a non-rebatable or partially rebatable allocated pension currently, that will become fully rebatable. Okay, that's relevant if they're under 60, but from 60 and from 1 July next year, and if the changes go through as expected, that will just become tax-free non-assessable income, which is fantastic. So we conclude that this is basically neutral whether we stay in an allocated pension or switch to the new type of pension. In terms of how much impact these changes would have on a two allocated pension excess benefit strategy, a very common strategy for planners to have put in place for their clients. Let's look at Lorraine and Dwayne Dwyer. They retired 3 years ago. They started two allocated pensions, they're homeowners. You can see all the details there. How will super reform affect this situation? Well, there's their current situation. They've got two allocated pensions. You can see the age pension kicks in, that's the grey area, so it kicks in, you know, about 83 or so. Now, there's the same line of their allocated pension income. Now we'll look at, in the new world of no excess pension, and we can see the difference that it's made. We're not paying any tax. Our age pension actually kicks in earlier. That's because of the reduced taper rate. So in terms of the assets test, currently it phases out $3 per fortnight for every $1,000 of assets above the threshold. That's going to change to $1.50 per $1,000 of assets. So that reduced taper rate, great news for retirees. More people will get more age pension earlier. Okay, and in terms of over the course of their retirement in net present value terms, on these assumptions, there's $162,000 more net income for these clients, which is fantastic. And the pink line just shows you the new minimum pension payments that they could take. Okay. So that was allocated pensions, the first style of pension that we wanted to have a think about. In terms of term allocated pensions, one of the key reasons for going into a TAP in the past has been the RBL advantage. Okay, now that's going to become irrelevant from 1 July next year. So really the reason you would go into a TAP is for the Social Security reason. Okay, now this Social Security advantage of a TAP, the 50% asset test exemption, is going to be grandfathered, but it will be diluted by the fact that the taper rate is halving. Now, Social Security is going to be relevant for a bigger range of retirees, and we'll have a look at that in a minute. And when we're thinking about a TAP, we need to think about the income level that we can take, the term that we can choose. We've got quite a wide range of terms that we can choose from. And, you know, I think it's safe to assume that if you are in a TAP, you'll have the payment levels that we know now for a TAP, and you won't be able to switch across to the new minimum pension payment level. But you do have that plus or minus 10% flexibility when you work out your standard annual pension payment for a TAP. Okay? Now, in terms of if a client is in a TAP, there's pretty much no opportunity to commute to the new type of pension unless they're within the 6 month of commencement window where they always could commute a TAP. Okay, I think this is a bit unfair for clients, especially if they've gone in for RBL reasons and that reason's just simply falling away, but that's what the government in its wisdom has announced that they want to do. But you always do have that ability to change the underlying assets. So yes, the capital is locked up, but you can invest it as you choose. If you wanted to commute to another type of compliant pension, including another TAP, how long have you actually got to do this? Well, probably only till 1 July 07. Okay, now there's a bit of a black hole between 1 July 07, when most of the changes come in, and 20 September 07, which is when the taper rate actually halves. In practice, you probably can't buy a TAP between 1 July and 20 September. If you could, you'd get a 50% asset test exemption, but you probably can't. So if clients want to go into a TAP or want to rearrange their TAP, they're in a TAP and they need to stay in a TAP, but they want to rearrange to perhaps a shorter term or a longer term, they basically need to do that before 1 July next year. So planners are thinking about whether they want to change the term for existing TAP clients. Now, we may think about starting a TAP for Social Security reasons before the deadline, which for practical purposes is before 1 July next year. Okay, so why would we do this? Well, having a look at the age pension entitlement that a married homeowner would get, this graph shows the age pension against the total assets, assessable assets for Social Security. Okay, so you can see that currently, at just over 200,000, it's 229 I think, that the age pension entitlement starts to reduce. Until just over 500,000, you would be getting no age pension. Okay, now that's the current situation without using a TAP. Now if we put 200,000 of assets into a TAP, then we would improve our age pension position. Now 200,000 of assets, 50% asset test exemption, so 600 is kind of like 500,000 in terms of assessable assets, so you can see how the graph has shifted there. So we've improved our age pension position by purchasing a TAP. Okay, now with the changes, and that makes per annum $7,800 difference, which is pretty good, $8,000 free. Gotta love it. Okay, so if we look at going forward with the taper rate halving, what does this mean? Well, this improves the situation for all retirees. That the new situation without a TAP is that you could be getting some age pension up to assets of just over 800,000, which is quite amazing. So clients that might have 700,000 of assets, planners are thinking, well, they're never going to get age pension or not for the next 10 years when they may or may not start running down our assets, as we've talked about earlier today. So until they run down their assets to 500,000, you know, they're not going to get any age pension. Well, now they are. So it's quite amazing. So it's really broadening the range of retirees that will have Social Security and its associated benefits. Okay, so you get age pension, you get the healthcare card and whatnot. So it's going to cost the government a lot of money. But anyway, so that's the new situation with no TAP. What if we went into a TAP? Well, again, we'd improve our situation, not by as much, by half as much. But that's still $3,900 free kick from the government. So do we want to knock that back? This may be why we might see a rush on TAPs before the deadline. Okay? Now, that was graphically, these numbers are just there in a table for you, so you can see the exact numbers. And you can see the improvement there. So it's certainly a stark reason to consider going into a TAP or staying in a TAP. So we've looked at allocated pensions, we've looked at term allocated pensions. Now just briefly looking at self-managed super funds with defined benefit pensions. Typically these were entered into for RBL compression reasons. And the clients in these arrangements, unless they're within that six-month window, can only commute to another complying pension. So what could a client in this situation do? Well, their options include continuing the current pension, which is fine. That's quite allowable. The arrangements are settled. You know, they went through all the palaver of talking to an actuary. I mean, you know, let's just leave it. They're going to have to talk to them every year or however often it is, but I don't know, every year or so just to check the pension's still solvent, etc. But, you know, it's all been worked out. Let's just keep it going. That's fine. They're welcome to do that. Potentially having what's typically a low level of income for the dollar amount of assets may appeal. The reserves that tend to get built up in these pensions may have estate planning benefits. And depending when they went into the arrangement, they may have 100% asset test exemption. Okay, so that's before 20 September 2004. You know, that would be a good reason to stay in these arrangements. But just looking at an alternative, they may consider moving to a TAP pre-1 July 07 and moving actually the surplus reserves back into accumulation. Now, one advantage or disadvantage, I'll let you decide, is that they could avoid actuaries doing this. Which removes admin expense, it removes complexity, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? It's probably easier to understand, it's certainly easier to understand, it's more manageable from an estate planning point of view. You know, you don't have this build up of reserves, you don't have to worry about who's going to have control of reserves on death, et cetera. You release the surplus reserves, and given that surcharge is not there, you don't have that tax hit from moving into. From allocating the reserves to members' accounts. So it's pretty good. And the TAP payments may be more flexible year to year than the signed off actuarial, this is what thou shalt pay this year for this pension. Okay, so they're the kind of things people need to weigh up if they have, if they're in this situation or for planners who have clients in this situation. Okay. So in terms of like what planners are thinking about for their retiree clients, they should be thinking about for all clients with super, whether it's better to amalgamate the benefits or keep them separate, whether they should look at recontribution strategies, make fresh contributions to super where possible. They certainly should get their learning caps on and learn about Social Security. Many of the planners I talk to have never considered Social Security. They don't want to know about it. They're going to have to know about it. And they may even need to know, like, the aged care rules, which you know, typically are further down the track. But you know, it's a way that a planner can add value by thinking about those things now. And whether the client should start a new term allocated pension before the deadline. Okay, for existing allocated pension clients, they may want to commute to the new type of pension post 1 July next year. For clients with existing TAPs or other complying pensions, you may want to look at rearranging those affairs while you can. Okay, so basically it's going to be a pretty busy 6 or 7 months for planners. Okay. Looking at the second phase, transition to retirement, So transition to retirement pensions were introduced just last year. It's brought a significant change to the planning process. In terms of can you have a transition to retirement pension and therefore afford to salary sacrifice more of your employment income into super, and, you know, isn't this a bit of a magic pudding effect? Is this really okay with the tax office? Pretty much got the green light from the ATO. I've pulled out some relevant bits of their announcement last year. Now, they have said that, basically it's okay. They have said we would only be concerned where accessing the pension or undertaking the salary sacrifice may be artificial or contrived. So we're thinking, what does that mean? And basically that's like sort of a standard disclaimer that they sort of threw in because, you know, they can't say it's going to be okay in all cases. So case-by-case basis, but probably typical case, it's fine. Okay, so that's about as good as you can get from the ATO. Now, so we've said if we're at preservation age, currently 55, we can start one of these transition to retirement pensions. But this idea of transitioning to retirement, it's also, or in other words, having a pension and having salary income, is also relevant for people aged 65 to 74 and still working. Okay. So, a bit of a case study. We've got Dwendal. He's 59 years old. He has $500,000 in super. Now, his current situation is that his salary plus super brings his total remuneration to $120,000. Now, on the left-hand side, you can see that if he takes his salary, pays tax, he's got net cash flow of $56,000. So, you know, that's pretty good. If instead he puts his $500,000 of super into a pension arrangement, draws down his pension, so therefore can salary sacrifice more of his salary into super, you can see he could end up in the same cash flow position. Okay? So what difference does this make to his super position? Well, under the current arrangements, he's got $500,000 in accumulation, $45,000 per annum going into super from his employer, pays contributions tax, net annual contribution of $38,000. Compared to if we bump up his super by substituting our employment income with our pension income, much more going into super, more contribution tax to pay, net we've got about $2,000 more. Okay, in terms of the earnings within super, if he's in accumulation, generally 15% tax applies. If he's in pension, zero. Okay? Now, that 241 is not zero. The astute of you will have noticed. That's because we've assumed that when we make the contributions, they are invested in accumulation. Okay? So, yes, the majority of funds are in pension, but when we add contributions, we're just going to leave them in accumulation. Now, you could finesse that and ship that off to a pension, but that's why that is 241, not zero. Okay, thank you. So basically, he's ahead at the end of year one. And if we look at the second year, we get a similar result. I'm just going to whiz through this because we're running out of time. This is the second year result. That was in terms of cash flow. This is in terms of his super balance. So again, he's racing along. He's improved his situation by using transition to retirement, pension, and extra salary sacrifice contribution. So the combination of those two strategies, very powerful for many clients. Okay, and from age 60, super comes out tax-free. Terrific. Okay, so he needs to draw down. He only needs to draw less of a pension to be in the same cash flow position. Fantastic. Okay. Now, in year 11, we actually have to drop down our super contributions, and that's simply because the maximum or the concessional deductible contribution, the new limits, will be $100,000 for people aged 50 and over for 5 years only. Then they'll drop back to what everyone else gets, which is $50,000. But it will be indexed with inflation, so that's why that's 70 there. The 70 is the new 50. Okay. Any odd house, so basically he streets ahead using this strategy. And I'm sorry we've had to rush through that, but I'm sure you can see the point. And the big advantage is, of course, the super coming out with a rebate, the pension income coming out with a rebate before age 60 and tax-free from age 60, and the balance in super switching across to a zero tax environment. They're basically the two effects that make transition to retirement pensions so attractive. Okay, yeah, so it's all good. I don't know. Yeah, so you'd really want to be considering this for clients and potentially for yourselves or your parents, etc. So the third phase is really quick, I promise. Wealth accumulation, so we can see retirement's great, transition to retirement's great, better get some money into super now so we can take advantage of this. So the accumulation phase, you know, you want to build up your critical mass so you can make most use of your transition to retirement pensions. Super's definitely attractive, you know, for clients compared to other uses of the funds. The fact that you pay 15% contribution tax going in and potentially no tax coming out, I mean, you know, there's been various analysis of whether now super is more attractive than making extra payments off your mortgage. Numerically, it probably is. There's probably other reasons why clients wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. But, you know, the numerical advantage is very strong. So basically, planners will be looking at all sorts of ways that they can maximise their clients' funds in super. And I've listed some of them for you there, which we don't have time for, but I'll just whiz through and see anything particularly catches my eye. Moving assets to a self-managed fund, particularly from related parties, this has always been an issue and will continue to be, but, you know, this golden opportunity to get $1 million undeducted contribution into super before 1 July next year would be another reason why, you know, this issue is really important. So a client has, you know, a couple of properties and they don't want to sell them, but they want to put them into their super fund, and they can make use of $1 million undeducted contribution before 1 July next year. But are they allowed to do that? Well, there's lots of rules. Maybe yes, maybe no. Okay? You can have a look at that slide in your own time or ask me a question later. Concessional deductible contributions, really important. The age limit for deductible contributions raised to 75. This is great, because many clients of planners I talk to are working after the age of 70, yet voluntary employer contributions can't be made after the age of 70 currently. So that's going to change, and deductions will be available for both employer contributions and unsupported personal contributions after that age, which is great, up to the age of 75. So people will make use of these concessions when they're available. That's probably all we've got time for. Is that fair enough? Yeah, I'll let you have a look at that in your own time. So the conclusions are that definitely we have this third phase to think about, which is transition. This is just a repeat of the slide I had before. You've got super income from preservation age if you want it. Your non-super investment income is also favourably affected by these changes. Planners need to perhaps shift their focus from tax to some of these other areas they can add value, including Social Security. And, yeah, it's going to be a busy time for planners. Thank you.